Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Jack Piatelli. Jack, how are we doing?
Doing really well. No complaints. Always fun to be in the studio with you and our great producer, Saf.
Big Saf, holding it down. Stay tuned for a podcast featuring him where we basically roast each other and you guys can enjoy that. But our guest today is Archers attackman Will Manny, former UMass attackman Will Manny. Will, how's it going, man?
I'm great, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Super pumped to have you on. I know, like, Jack and I were talking. I was like, Jack, do you know him? He's like, I don't know him. Do you know him? I'm like, yeah, we go back really far. Mostly from, I think I covered UMass a little your senior year, and then a lot with the Cannons back when I was doing a lot of pro stuff. And tons of fun. Lots of weird stories, I think, from your time in Boston. But one of my favorite quotes I ever had was, Will Manny got traded for a bag of balls and an Olive Garden gift certificate, and it's the worst trade I've ever seen in my life. And you know what? Pretty much holds true.
Hey, can I rephrase that?
Yeah, go ahead.
You said I didn't know Will. I don't know him personally. I know who he is.
Well, yeah.
And I know what a great player he is and a great first-team All-American at UMass. I didn't have to look that up because I knew from watching him play at UMass. He was a great player at UMass, and he's had a great career in the MLL and the PLL.
Yes, and I know you know all Western Mass guys, so I should know better. That was an assumption on my part and a miswording, I will say.
All right.
I knew you know.
Thank you.
But let's talk about play style. Let's talk about your time at UMass. I think you were mostly a ball carrier, initiator, you know, got that Long Island style, able to distribute the ball, score, break GLE. And now you've kind of evolved your style to be a little bit more of a shooter and a off ball guy and, a guy that, you know, meshes well with pretty much everyone you put with him.
Yeah, it's been fun because it helps me with my coaching, you know, whether it was when I was coaching in college or with my club team now out here in Utah. I think I see the game better than ever at this point as a player and as a coach. And, yeah, I went from, you know, a quarterback slasher at UMass. And then I kind of had a year and a year and a half of off ball when I got to the Cannons to play with Boyle and PR and, Kevin Buchanan. And then when Ryan retired, you know, I went back to more of a quarterback role. Then I got traded to the Lizards for a bag of balls and became more of an off ball guy again with Rob. And then obviously now playing with Tom and Grant, you know, I continue to stay more in that role as an off ball guy. And, you know, I still think I'm very capable of dodging, you know, in a two-man game with a pick, and dodging a short stick whenever I can or whenever those opportunities arise. But the more I recognize it, it's like, you know, just do your job. And, you know, whether I get face guarded or the team slides, like I think our offense recognizes that better than ever now in year four. And, yeah, I'm just kind of out there as the veteran trying to do whatever I can for our team and let these young bucks do their thing because they're really damn good.
Well, it's a great message for players out there, especially the college players who are coming into a new world and adjusting to the college game. You've done a great job adjusting your game to have a long, successful career. Is one role more favorable for you to play than the other?
To save the body, I think off ball is a little bit, it helps you a little bit. I don't have as many bruises as Grant does after a game nowadays, but, I think it's just my role overall of like helping set up what our scouting report is and what our game plan is going to be. You know, if I have a third defenseman on me that's not good covering the ball, I trust that I'll touch the ball a little bit more that game. If I have a guy that wants to slide and, you know, just recognizing that, I think for me, if I had to pick, I would be somewhere right in the middle, right where I could dodge a little bit and play some off ball. But I think I've, you know, gotten close to mastering the off ball scenario, whether it's, you know, I'm open and can score, or just take my guy out of the game and, you know, get my other teammates open and taking pride in it.
So when you have the opportunity to be a Dodger, has that made you a better feeder because you become a very good off ball and you're able to see the field more and see maybe where the slides are coming, where the open guy is?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's a great question, Jack. And I think I've had the most assists I've had in a bunch of years this year. I don't know exactly. I know 17. A lot of that's in transition. What is it?
17.
17. Yeah. So, I think that's, you know, I don't know if I've even got to 10 the past three or four years, but, I think that comes from transition, you know, teammates trusting me in transition, man up. I got the ball a lot when Grant was out for the first couple of weeks. You know, I had a lot of touches and man up and through skip passes. And, but I definitely think my off ball play has allowed me to see where two slides are coming from, look for skip passes and, you know, complete that overall IQ, like I was kind of touching on earlier. But yeah, it's definitely helped my feeding ability get back to where it was when I was in college.
And I truly believe that until you actually play either the Dodger or off ball, you don't understand the position or the opportunities those position create unless you're in it, right? And one of the things I like to do with our attackmen is have them play those different positions so they have a better understanding. Like, you know, if you're a Dodger and you got a you get a slide or a third guy comes and slides on you and you're still trying to go to the goal, we see a lot of these young kids do that. They don't understand that, you know, there's two or three guys wide open on the other side of the field. So become that other guy on the other side of the field, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's that's a great point. And, you know, for us on the archers specifically now, I think we have guys that can win their matchup and feed all over the field, which is makes us a pretty complete offense. And we're continuing to mix and match and find that. But yeah, I think when we watch film, you know, there's a point where Grant is a mirror guy, and very rarely is he a mirror guy because he usually has the ball on a stick, and he realizes that he can get a wide open shot if his guy just hedges or goes fast to that Dodger, and he's like, damn, that's kind of nice. And I'm like, yeah, you know, we have the understanding throughout our team that every role matters, especially on the offensive end for us, and I know our defense does as well, but that's why it's so much fun to play in.
I think one of the things I've noticed this year watching PLL games, which is I'll admit a little more casual than years past, is that there are less veterans in the league, like longtime veterans, than there's ever been in pro lacrosse, in my opinion. You're one of them, which I looked back at your career and I was like, he started in 2013. Like, yeah. It made me feel super old because I was covering it before then. But what is your perception of that? Does the league feel different? Because watching it, it feels different to me.
In what way, Kyle? What do you mean? Just like overall in general?
The veteran presence. I feel like there's just way less of the, not heady plays, but like veteran stuff. Like there's a lot of younger guys doing younger guy stuff.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, it's pretty spot on. Credit to the guys that are vets in 9 and 10 years right now, honestly, you know, you look at E-Law and Channy, Marcus, myself, Rat, Adam, you know, is still rocking and rolling in the net. There's plenty of them out there. And, you know, you look at CJ Costabile, you know, look at him come back this year and do the things he's doing. So that's the beauty of the game. You know, you could be, it depends on what your role is and how much you embrace it on your team. But at the same time, I think the league loves to, you know, hype up the young bucks coming out of college. And, you know, it is what it is. I don't think it's a good or a bad thing. I just think some of these kids, you know, you look at the Chris Grays and Teets and, you know, they're stud lacrosse players. And then there's other guys, you know, but they score one goal between the legs and it's all over social media. And, you know, that's what the kids and fans look for nowadays, as opposed to the consistency for 10 years that I always appreciate Eric Law for and his leadership and respect. So, you know, that's just the broad scheme of the game on that scale. And the guys that do their thing get more respect from me personally in the long run.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I wish people understood better about pro lacrosse specifically, because I have such a deep background doing it. I've done it the longest of anything I've, you know, done as far as a journalist, if you want to call it that, or sports writer. The difference between good players and great players is consistency. And I think that, you know, that's something that you've demonstrated throughout your career. And, you know, you've made adjustments to your game to, you know, not only to keep playing, but for the good of your team. And, you know, you have natural chemistry with Marcus Holman, and you've developed chemistry with Grant Ament very quickly. So I think that's the thing that needs to be praised. And that's kind of what I mean by a veteran presence, right? The vets that have done it and been in it, and don't just play, like, yes, that some vets have highlights, right? Everyone's got a BTB here and there. You've got a couple righty goals, I'm sure. You know, like, that's a thing that matters and builds up. And if I'm going to be, like, critical of anything, it's the attention given to the consistency of vets. And I for one, like, I really admire it. And that's why I wanted to have you on as a vet and someone that, you know, I've covered in the past and has kind of developed into the player that you are. I remember one story I wanted to tell that I thought you'd like is I was at tryouts for 2017 Team USA. And honestly, man, I was like, I can't believe they're not going to put Will on this team. Because you played, I want everyone to know that's listening, you played amazing in those tryouts. Yeah, I was there. You. That was sick. And I think there's a lot of, you know, that needs to be paid attention to is the role of someone that's willing to adapt for the better of the team. And I know that now you as a coach, I'm sure that's like part of your curriculum.
Yeah, no, it's, and I appreciate that, Kyle. And, you know, I just wanted to go back to what you were talking about earlier with like being great. Right. And Marcus, you know, Brian Holman actually shared something. He shares something with Marcus, myself, Adam and Scott every week, as, you know, a friend figure, a coach figure. And, you know, one of the things was, if you want to be great, be consistently good, right? And that's something I've, you know, I think I've taken pride in year to year as a pro lacrosse player and being present and doing whatever it is for the team. And that naturally happens for you, right? When you have an ego and it's all about you, it's not going to happen. And the people aren't going to want to play with you. They're not going to want to pass you the ball. They're not going to want to get open jack, right? When I'm dodging, you know, Tom Shriver's not going to want to cut. He's going to stand up there. But that's not who, you know, I've surrounded myself with and who I've been in circles with. And I think that leads to success, right? And, you know, for me, you know, with that USA tryout, right, I think that was, in a way, right, it was a big bummer to me, but I think it was also a spark in the middle of my career to continue to push me forward to make this 23, you know, USA team. And, you know, I'm now a part of this training team, got named on that about a month ago. And, you know, there's some young bucks on that left side that will be there, but I'm going to use my veteran presence and, you know, my confidence in myself and being there before at tryouts a couple of years back and getting cut to my advantage. And, you know, just another challenge. Hopefully it's after, you know, the week after winning a PLL championship and going right to USA tryouts with a smile on my face. But no matter what it is, I'm just going to go for it one more time as best as I can. And hopefully the coaches can see that value. And, you know, it is what it is.
My perspective on this is over time, you've learned what your, obviously what your strengths are, what your role is. And the young players coming in the league don't know what their role is and they don't play to their strengths. They try and do more than they're, not that they're capable of, but they don't understand they have a lot of talent around them, and yeah, they don't have to do everything. And what they don't show is the five turnovers. You know, you might score the goal between the legs, but you know, you've turned the ball over five times, and you really, if you're a professional lacrosse player, you shouldn't be turning the ball over five times. And if I'm your teammate, you know, that gets frustrating. And I think over time you might lose some respect for that player because he's doing the same things over and over again. And, you know, you got to wake up and you got to smell the coffee because you're going to find yourself on the sideline unless you don't figure out what your role is. And is the third defenseman covering you, or is the top man-to-man guy covering you during the game? And that's something that takes some time. But, again, it's the ego. You know, they build these kids up so much that they think they're flawless. Yeah.
That's why I invented the Devitt matrix. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't. Explain.
It's goals plus assists minus turnovers.
I love it.
That's my, I basically stole it from another sport. I don't even remember what it was, but that's important in lacrosse. I think that's actually I named it after myself because I am not original. It's not because I'm, again, my ego at all. I just thought it was a cool thing to do. But I think that's an interesting thing if you look at turnovers, right? And turnovers have always been a part of people that analyze the game. But people that consume the game don't really see it as that much. Like, you and I watch games and we're like, and I'm sure, Will, you watch games and you're like, oh, I didn't like that. You know, like, for me, it's less of a negative thing than that's a factual thing. A turnover is a fact, right?
Yeah, and I've been watching the PLL with my kids for the last 3 years, and watching the first year, I think, to your point, with the veterans out on the field, what I've seen more this year is more turnovers and more poor play because of the influx of the younger players. I'm not saying it's not still a great game, but I watch the game sometimes and I say, they should be making that play or they should make that pass. But they're young and they're just not playing to their strengths. Would you agree with that, Manny?
Yeah, it's great points, you know, and that's with the PLL, 52-second shot clock, shorter field. It's you see people and hear people say, one turnover, we'll get the ball back. And it's true in a way, but it's also, you know, I'll speak for the archers, right? It's like, we're not winning 75% of the faceoffs like the Atlas are. So our possessions are, you know, we need to take care of the ball when we can. And if we won 75%, if the archers won 75% of the faceoffs, I don't think we'd lose a game, to be honest with you. But you know, I look at, to your guys' point, I look at that Chrome team, right, where they have Nick Turn, Wisnowskis, and Dylan Malloy. You know, there's not really a veteran on that attack group. And what I look at is, I'm just comparing that to my career here, where, you know, my rookie year, I had Ryan Boyle at every Cannons practice. If I piss the ball away twice in a row, he's screaming at me in practice at Harvard Stadium, right? And that hit me right away how important it is to just don't play to make a mistake. It's more so just, you know, get the ball to the playmakers and do your job. You know, those guys, Nick Turn's killing it this year, Logan's killing it, and Dylan has had a very solid year. They're a very good group. But I think they, you know, when I watch them, there are silly turnovers in those games that where I think the Chrome can, you know, put a team away, and then there's a couple of turnovers, you know. I'm not taking anything away from them. I love watching them play as a group. They're fun to watch. But I just, when you guys were talking, I was relating it to my career, and I don't see a Ryan Boyle screaming at, you know, those guys early in their careers to help them learn that. But they will. They're very smart lacrosse players.
And to Kyle's point, just having that veteran presence on the field for those younger guys is very, very important.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, they have McIntosh. And again, I just picked that group because I think they, you know, they're fun to watch. They're young and they're producing, but the turnovers thing is a lot. And, you know, you look at the Cannons too, right? You have Lyle and Asher who have the ball in their stick a lot. And, you know, the volume that Lyle has and the numbers he puts up is crazy. And then, you know, you just have guys who are young and make mistakes, but you got to learn at some point. It's one of those things where you have a veteran that could teach you and you have a different role, or you learn from the mistakes and you get better in year two. But it's about playmaking. It's not much time when you get out there. You have 28 seconds to play offense. And defenses are really damn good. I haven't said that yet either. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, not to, you know, I mean, who led the NCAA in turnovers last year? Brendan Nickturn. I look at this, so that's like my first stat now. I know like everybody looks at points and assists and goals and stuff. I always look at turnovers now because like that gives you a good idea of efficiency, but you're right. It is a skewed stat, especially in the PLL because the shot clock is so short.
For sure.
I know we've had Andy Towers on the show before and he hates when I bring up all the turnovers because like he lets his, he likes to have his guys play pretty free. And I know you play in a system for the archers and you guys have a lot of touches on the ball. And I think a couple weeks ago I was talking to Rob Pinnell And he was like, well, what do you think we should do on offense? You know, like kind of throwing it back at me. I'm like, how about you do less two-pass offensive possessions, and then you'll be better. And ironically, you know, Redwood's coming up with some wins, you know, like the, it happened pretty quick, man. Like, yeah, that's well, the key
for that. For, well, I'm not going to give the Redwoods the scout because we play them next week, but I, there's a pretty easy answer for that offense to be a little bit better. And I think he's doing it, but no, I agree with you, man. It's a combination of a lot of things with, you know, with the turnovers, and I'm with Coach Towers in a way. You don't want to think about it much, and you want to stay positive and move on to the next one. But it all depends on, you know, for us, our face-offs, honestly, the amount of possessions, right? I think you look at probably Teat Gray, and, you know, the Chrome have won a bunch of face-offs too with Connor Farrell, but those teams probably had more possessions and more touches than we did, right? So they're probably going to naturally have more turnovers than somebody on our team. I don't look at those, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, winning the game at the end of the day, every team has a chance to win the game at some point throughout those four quarters. And when you make the plays at the right time, those are the teams that go deep into the playoffs.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. This fall, Quincy College in Quincy, Massachusetts drops the puck on its first ever hockey season in the City of Presidents, just 10 minutes from Boston. The Granite, as they're known, will play in the CHF Collegiate Hockey Federation against Babson, Mass Maritime, Nichols, Sacred Heart, and D3 programs at UNH and Farmingdale State in New York. The Quincy College Granite will be well coached. Kyle Robertson has been coaching regional junior teams for 20 years, and over 100 of his players have gone on to NCAA programs. Kyle's assistant is Matt Gibbons, who's been coaching at North Quincy High for 12 years and won three titles there. 3 years ago, he was the MIAA Coach of the Year. And as far as the educational part, Quincy College has a lot to offer. 37 different two-year degrees, and it's super affordable. There's even a new four-year business management degree that costs much less than other four-year schools. Want to make some history in a first-year hockey program? Now's your chance. Get more info at quincycollege.edu/hockey. Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division 1, 2, and 3 colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
What are your thoughts on the 52-second clock, the shortened field, and especially the running time? You know what I find? I think it's great for TV that it's 12-minute running time periods. But as a player, not only don't you have a lot of time to run your offense, 28 seconds, the quarters go by very quickly.
Yeah. If you look at a PLL game compared to an old MLL game, right, you're pretty much missing a full quarter's worth of time. You know, 3 minutes, you know, close to 12 minutes of a game that's eliminated. to be honest, getting older, I think it's nice because it's a quicker game, and, you know, it's just faster paced. But I love the shortened field. I think it's easier for the viewer. You know, it's crazy to think that PLL professionals play on a smaller field than some youth kids at a tournament, which is crazy. The shot clock, I still wish it was at 60. I think 52 is a little too fast. Just to, you know, give us 8 seconds to clear and give us 50 seconds to play offense instead of, you know, 30. And the running time is, you know, it just is what it is. I don't think the players were really going to change the thoughts on that process. I think that's more for TV and for everything else, which is fine. But I'm a fan. I just, you know, if the clock was 60, I think everyone would be, you know, defenses might not be, but I think the game would be a little bit cleaner.
So I think Jack and I are in the minority for most people. We don't like the short field. And I'm going to tell you why I don't like it personally. It kills the slow break. It kills the beauty of transition, I think. And I get it. You want transition to be fast, 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 and it speeds it up. But I think there's an art to the slow break. I don't know if, like, when you were playing, didn't you just love a slow break? Because you're like, there's so many things you can do. You have choices. Fast break, it's like, you better make a decision or you are done. But slow break, it's like, I can make this decision or I can wait one more second and make a different one. And we can still get a goal either way. And I think that's one of the things that I don't like about it. But I get it, right? Like, I understand it. I don't think it's bad, but I miss that. And especially now with PLL, ever since the bubble, man, God, they just, teams just drop dudes into the hole. They sub early on defense and they kill all the breaks. I can't
That was going to be my point, Kyle, was I think that's more on the defense than on the offense, right? I think we have thought processes of doing slow breaks and doing some, you know, 5-on-5 stuff with our personnel, but teams literally with 8 seconds left after playing 20 seconds of offense literally just run off the field so that they don't give up transition. And
I hate it.
You know, yeah, it's,
I don't like it.
It's a little frustrating for sure, but you know, you gotta get the ball to our offense and then get our personnel off, and then, you know, we're confident in our 6-on-6 on both sides for the Archers. So in that vein, we're pretty confident.
What I don't like about the short field, it gives or allows the LSMs to become an offensive threat more often than if you had the regular field size. Yeah. And as a fan and as somebody who wants more people introduced to the game, you become more fan likely. You've got the best attackman in the world playing in this league. You only have 28 seconds on offense, and now you've got the LSMs, you know, taking shots and becoming offensive players when you have, you know, the three best attackmen in the world on the field. So I don't know. I'd
rather some grumpy old man stuff we're doing right now. It's fine. Well, you know that it's the PLL's fault. The PLL is responsible for offensive LSMs. I'm going to say it. And for better or worse, though, right? For betterment, like Ratliff was the first guy, right? Like he was the first guy that you're like, Scott Ratliff, watching him play at Loyola and seeing him translate to the program, which it took a while for him to translate, by the way. But when he did, he changed everything. Just like before him, Brody Merrill changed everything. Kyle Sweeney changed everything. That's a position where the pros don't get any credit for developing that position. And they should, because that's where it became essential to have a long stick that could carry. And now, like, imagine, I mean, you coached in college in the last couple of years. Imagine having an LSM that can't handle, because they couldn't handle. I swear to God, they couldn't handle till 2010. None of them. If they could, it was like, you know, that was a bonus.
Yeah, you usually put a guy there that's a little bit of a bonehead and doesn't know team defense and can run around and just be a pest, right? But
don't give away my high school coaching secrets, please. Please don't do that.
You go out and you recruit that now, and you know, look at the starting poles on every PLL team. They're freaking studs. Right. And they can handle, they could, you know, I just think of CJ. It's so cool to see CJ Costabile doing what he's doing after, you know, he took a year or two off and now he's back. And, you know, those guys pick up ground. They grind, you know, the amount that they sub and they run the field and they, you know, have to cover, they do a lot. And, you know, Rat is obviously, I'm biased because I've been playing with him for years and years, but he's given me a lot of points in my career too, by cutting and feeding me. And, you know, those guys, if you develop chemistry, you can get a goal or assist out of them every single game easily in that transition period, even with the shortened field, if you do it right. But yeah, it's fun to watch. And, you know, I look at Brody, I got to play with Brody, play against him. And now he's, you know, he's 20 years in pretty much and doing, you know, I thought he showed some spark the last two games that they played in. But got to play with some legends. I got to play with Sweeney, all those names that you brought up. I got to really play with, which is cool to do.
I want to switch gears a little bit. Grew up in Long Island. Obviously lacrosse is a big part of the Long Island high schools community. How did you end up at UMass, and talk a little bit about your recruiting process?
Yeah, I ended up at UMass from a performance at Top 205, I'm pretty sure was, or, you know, I always called it Top 410 because there was over 400 kids there, not 200 kids. I think I played well there. I had, you know, I try to remember back to the letter Coach Canella wrote me after that, but I honestly think he saw me ride the ball back one time and get an assist and high five to teammates for, you know, helping get in the hole, whatever it may be. I just never got a response from a coach the way that I got a response from Coach Canella. And that connection, I wasn't highly recruited. You know, I didn't get any ACC, you know, looks or anything like that, or, you know, the Big Ten looks at this, you know, this year now, any of those schools. So, when I went on my visit there, I saw how fast paced the tempo of practice was, and the coaches really cared for me and my family. And that was exactly how I played. And, you know, Coach Canella is a smart guy. I think he knows to get guys into his system, and he's a Long Island guy as well. So he has a great connection there. And, that was what allowed me to then look into, you know, when I was going to be a freshman, I wanted to play for 4 years. That was one of my goals, right? If I went to an ACC school, I probably wouldn't have done that, but I wanted to play for 4 years. And UMass had two graduating, Tim Belise and Jimmy Connolly graduating when I was going to be a freshman. So two starting attack spots were going to be open. And I was like, all right, well, that gives me the best chance. And, I fit in well academically at UMass at the time. And, you know, my process was just, it was pretty fast. But I felt at home, and that's kind of, you know, we took a lot of visits. Me and my family spent that fall. I ended up not playing soccer my junior year, and going on visits and got to see a bunch of different schools. 'Cause I'm the oldest, I have a younger sister. So my parents never really went through the process, and I knew what I wanted, and, you know, now we're here.
Talk a little bit about the position, the attack position. You talked about Greg Canella was very impressed with the way you were riding that particular day at the camp. And I think a lot of players watch attack position, and they see players scoring goals, making great assists. But yeah, to be a great attackman, there's so much more to being a good attackman. Talk a little bit about what it takes to be a great attackman and play at the college level and even in the professional level.
Yeah, I think over the years after recruiting, you know, for Wagner and then for Utah, nothing honestly pisses me off more than, you know, whether I'm recruiting or watching a game or on the field and seeing, you know, when the ball's on the other side of the field, watching our defense, seeing an attackman leaning on their stick. I think that's just disgraceful to the game. And it happens too much. I see it too much from kids nowadays. And, you know, whether it's a midfield line ground ball coming up, like it just looks lazy. You know, we're not on the golf course. And, you know, that would be my message to a lot of younger kids nowadays is stop leaning on your damn sticks. Because it's not a good look. For riding purposes, you know, there's, and the, on the, you know, other side of that, there's kids that I've seen play, and I watch games and I watch pro games now that I see guys, the ball's 25 yards away on an overpass, and you see attackmen sprinting, you know, full field, two hands on their stick to try to catch the guy, even if they might know they might not catch him. Right. And that effort is seen by others, you know, on your defensive end and your coaching staffs, and that could rub off on somebody, you know, to make a play later in the game. And, you know, I know our attack rides hard, and I've seen, you know, other teams in the PLL ride, harder this year, and it gives you opportunities. And, you know, you talked about it, goals and assists, that happens. That's what you're expected to do as the attackman, but who's going to do other little things better and work harder at them, because it will make you a complete player. You'll feel better if you get a riding goal in a game. You'll definitely have that vibe too if you end up putting that work in and caring about it a little bit more.
Very specific question, stat related.
Okay.
Should a shot that goes out and is backed up by the defense count as a turnover for the person that shot it? Or should it be a team turnover?
Yeah, we've actually talked about this summer because of Marcus's wife, Alex, played in the AU Pro. And if you get a shot clock violation in that league as a defense, your whole entire team gets points. Which is pretty cool. So to answer your question, I wouldn't consider it a turnover by the shooter. But I also want to consider it a cause turnover by the defenseman that backs it up.
Okay. That's good.
Because if I shoot the ball and we'll just say Kyle, because he asked the question, if Kyle's above the goal and out of position and doesn't back it up, but you know, Jack, you're covering him and you back it up as a defender, I think you should get that cause turnover because you beat him to the end line.
And that would happen. That would happen often.
you don't play defense. You don't know that. You don't know.
No, but there's that stuff is impactful too though, Kyle. Like I think of a kid at Utah right now. His name is Sammy Cambert. He was our LSM and he's from Texas.
Yep.
I actually tweeted about it a bunch this year because I got to go watch games, you know, hands off and enjoy the kids that we used to coach. He has three of those runouts a game, just anticipation where the attackmen aren't ready. I don't think it gets statted, right? I think, you know, within the team, I think your coaches will be like, hey, you know, this guy had this many backups or runouts, but it is something that I think should be considered because, you know, that is a cause turnover in a way. You cause that to be a turnover by running it out and beating somebody to the end line.
I'm pretty positive he was an honorable mention All-America on my ballot, now that you mentioned it.
He should have been. He was a stud this year.
He's very good. Let me ask you, you know, you started your coaching career at Wagner while you were playing for the Cannons. What made you wanted to get into coaching?
I always enjoyed, when I was in high school and college, I always enjoyed giving individual lessons or doing camps and clinics and coaching and giving back to the game. And when I finished at UMass, I got drafted by the Cannons and I worked at Bank of America for a year and a half. And during that time, I enjoyed it. It was fun learning. My dad's a finance guy, worked on Wall Street. And during that time, I just had a, you know, gap where I was like, I'm missing being on a lacrosse field more. And, you know, I miss coaching and I want to be, you know, I want to see what college coaching is about. And if I don't like it, I could go back to the finance world. So Posque was on the Cannons at the time, was the head coach at Wagner. And he told me after year one that he had his graduate assistant position open. And it was a perfect thing for me. My boss at Bank of America, I trained his son, you know, once or twice a week in his backyard for lacrosse and gave him lessons. And when I told him I have a chance to go get my graduate and master's degree paid for, you know, to coach college lacrosse for free, he was like, you'd be silly not to do that. So I think that was a big thing for me, knowing that I had the backing from my family. I felt confident in myself to make the move. And as soon as I stepped on the field for the first practice with Wagner, I knew that's where I was meant to be for, you know, the next extended period of time.
Quick Matt Posque story. After he went, I think he went to Montclair State. He texted me because he had my number from back when I covered the Cannons. And he's like, hey, where do you live in New Hampshire? And I was like, that's a weird question. I'm in the center. And he's like, are you near this random town way up north? And I'm like, no, why? And he's like, I'm looking at a boat. I was wondering if you could check it out for me. I'm like, I'm not going to check out a boat for you. Are we friends? Like, what is happening? So I know you'll appreciate that story because I know you know Posque and you're probably like, that's very on brand.
Yep. Yeah, he is one of the funniest dudes to ever be around. And yeah, I'm just – as much as I enjoyed playing with him on the field for the Cannons and being teammates and learning from him off ball, you know, his off ball play was really
king of the eye high crease. You know,
yeah. Just knew how to get open for a split second. And, you know, but as a friend and as a, someone I worked under at Wagner, it was, I'm just grateful that he got me into it. And, I got to give him a call soon and catch up with him because see how his kid's doing, his dog. He's a family guy.
Please throw that story in when you talk to him.
I will. I definitely will.
Because that's the wildest thing a player's ever asked me to do in my life.
Oh, Pop.
Well, through your time coaching, is anything you learned or gained from coaching that made you a better professional player?
I just think, you know, it's as simple as the more reps you get and the more you're around it, the better you get, right? And I've spent 9 years coaching college lacrosse, and I'm on the field every day and I'm watching film. And, you know, I could watch a game now and, like, I just see things before they happen. I think my IQ is at an all-time high, and I think if you were to ask, you know, any of my teammates, I think they would see me as more of that coach player, you know, and can diagram things quickly, can take advantage of matchups, and say, hey, you know, Tom, like, you know, this pole doesn't like when you do this, and Tom takes notes on that. And but I just think it's as simple as that, Jack. I think coaching helped me, it helped me realize that kids are different. You know, you have to coach some people differently, and some people you could be hard on, some people you have to, you know, continue to let them get more touches and more reps to learn their mistakes. But for me personally as a player, I think just being around the game more just took over my career and allowed me to play this long. And, you know, working out and training and having access to all those weight rooms and recovery stations and ice baths and all that stuff too, I think is a big help instead of sitting at a desk for 50, 60 hours a week.
So you're heading into the playoffs with the Archers. In my opinion, there's only four teams that can win the title, just complete teams. And just in my opinion, watching pro lacrosse for a long time, and it's you guys, the Whips, Chrome, and Atlas for me. I wouldn't even give anyone the edge at this point. I think there's just still a little too much lacrosse to be played. But do you feel like there is a little pressure on you guys because you've been so close and you have such these great offensive stats, and you're everyone is like, I love watching the Archers play because of the way that you guys play, and you can score and get timely stops, but maybe not all the stops that you need to win. What are your thoughts on that? Because I feel like there's a lot of the PLL marketing is like, everyone's awesome. This is awesome. This is great. I can't wait for this. Yeah. This is everybody's so good. Not everyone is good. And yeah. I think there is pressure to be the best, and to be the best, you have to win a championship.
Yeah, no, it's, that's a great point. And I don't know if I want to say I feel pressure to win the championship. Like, you know, we're not the defending champs. We're not, you know, the number one seed. We're right where we should be, honestly, you know. And I think for us, it's, we still have yet to find our best full fifth, you know, full game of lacrosse, putting it together, winning faceoffs, winning the GB wars, you know, putting up goals and getting, you know, those stops and clearing the ball at a high percentage. I think for us and me personally, I don't feel pressure at all, because I think, you know, we haven't even gotten to a championship game. I think it's more of, I don't see that as pressure. I just think it's, you know, do your job and get where you should be. I think we've failed the past couple of years. But I don't see it as pressure. I think it's, our locker room knows what we are capable of. And do I think we have the right crew to do it this year? For sure. But we're going to put our heads down, go to work, and, you know, the Redwoods are going to be hungry, and that's, we got to beat them first to beat those other two teams as we move forward. I know that's kind of bland, but it is, that's where we're at. And, you know, I agree with you. I remember a couple of weeks ago, after we lost and we didn't play well, and, you know, it's just like, who's going to stop the best offense? And it's like us at practice. And I'm just like, God, like, it's, that's the social media part. And that's people, you know, I know people like watching us because we do, you know, when we're on, we're friggin' on offense.
Yeah.
But it's playoffs. Teams are going to adapt. They're going to throw junk at us. And we haven't adapted well in the past. We just played right into what teams have done. We're not going to do that this year. And that's why I'm excited for, you know, Gillette, because we're going to be ready for anything. That's for sure.
I know that a lot of fans don't understand, as a professional lacrosse player, you're not compensated enough to play full time. So what is your daily schedule like to keep in shape and maintain, you know, the skill level that you have to play at a high level every weekend?
Yeah, and luckily that is changing in a way, Jack. You know, I think guys are getting compensated more, I think, you know, to the PLL, which is nice, and getting insurance, and, you know, it's happening slowly, but I think it's on the right path. But for me personally, you know, I run a lacrosse club out in Utah with Adam Gittleman called Utah Summit Lacrosse Club. We started it with the Holman family when we came out here. Shout out to Brian and Lori Holman and Marcus for everything they did out here in Utah before they headed back east. But I'm back on the, you know, I'm still in the lacrosse all day, every day grind mode, right? Whether it's coaching or running my club, you know, I have access to my trainers. I hit, I'm going to cryotherapy right after this. It's continuing to, you know, you have to look at yourself and believe you are a professional. And when you do that, you will act that way. And if you go play a game and, you know, you go out with your boys and then you don't pick up your stick or you don't train all week and you sit at your desk, you're not going to last long. You might have a good year or two, but it's like we were talking about earlier with the longevity. You know, I think those guys who are in lacrosse, they take care of themselves and they want to be great. You know, you could still play 10, 15 years into the league if you take care of yourself. Can't spend over $1 million a year on our bodies like LeBron does, but you if you budget a little bit for it, you could feel good. And you know, that's what I've done the past, you know, 5-6 years more so than ever. You can get away with it until you're 25, but as you get a little bit older, you got to do those little things to make sure you're feeling good for weekends.
See, Jack, I told you, you just act professional and you're a pro, right? That's how we do the podcast.
You got the title. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk a little bit.
That's right.
I'm still waiting for you to start acting professional.
Hey, who is the actual host of this podcast?
You.
I want to know.
You are.
Yeah. Whose name is bigger than
the legend? You're the legend.
No, you're the legend. I'm just playing up to you and playing up to great guests like Will Manny. Will, before we go, I just want to ask you about your club team. How's that going? When did you kind of get started with that, and what's the goal of that organization?
Yeah, so it started out as when we were coaching at the U, myself, Marcus, Adam, and Brian Holman, and with the help of Lori, Marcus's mom, she did all the back end work. We started Salt Lake Summit Lacrosse Club, and we called it Salt Lake because, one, we were coaching at the University of Utah, and when we were doing that, we had to stay within 50 miles of campus just due to NCAA and, you know, all those rules and regulations that you had to go by if we were associated with the program. So we couldn't go outside the Salt Lake area. When we were no longer coaching at Utah, we changed the name to Utah Summit Lacrosse Club. So now we are, you know, we had tryouts last week. We had kids from Jackson Hole. We had kids from St. George down south. We have the entire state, you know, under our umbrella now. And, you know, so we've had the club going for 5 years, and Utah Summit Lacrosse Club, this is our first fall in our complete rebranding, new color scheme, new everything, where we have, you know, 10 boys teams, 2 girls teams. Our Utah Lynx Lacrosse Club is our girls program run by Meg Whittle. We just hired her full time out here. She moved here. Her boyfriend works downtown, and she just came to town, and we got her on board. And we have, you know, 4 pros on our staff out here with myself, Adam, Brent Adams lives out here, you know, shout out OG Cannons. And then Bubba Fairman lives out here now. So we have a really good staff of guys and great high school coaches working under us. And what we're trying to do is, you know, we're at a point now where we believe we are the best in the state with what we provide. And we're trying to get our kids to play consistently at a higher level every fall and summer. You know, we're taking 4 of our teams to Autumn and Gold this upcoming fall at Towson. So just get our teams some competition versus the East Coast boys and where we grew up. But we want to win championships out here and the adrenaline tournaments and everything on the West Coast and continue to establish ourselves and grow the game in the state of Utah.
Well, I will say Moab, Utah is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. Love arches, all that stuff. So if you get a chance to, if you're in Utah, I mean, and you want to play lacrosse, now you know who to talk to, who to call. Will, want to thank you again for coming on. Best of luck with the archers in the playoffs going forward. Hopefully you guys can bring home the ship for Bates and Co.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. This was fun, and you know it's always fun to talk lacrosse and everything that's going on with pro lacrosse and the youth, and just appreciate you guys having me on, and hope to see you guys at Gillette, and hoping some good mojo from 2015 back there comes into play when I put the cleats on and strap up for our quarterfinal game versus the Redwoods. So appreciate you, Kyle and Jack. Thanks a lot, man.
Appreciate talking to you. Nice job. Well done.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli and our producer, Steve Saffron, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.